Back to the Hemingway List, the podcast where we do things Hemingway. Anna Karenina, Part 5, Chapter 23. J-Mama 8779 called it. Ivanovna has the hots for Karenin. J-Mama said, nailed it. You did indeed nail it. Well done, you. I'll admit I'm rooting for these two now. Maybe Karenin is a bit too dense to pick up on it, though. Now she has to face the music about the death claim. Wonder how this will play out. I kind of feel like that whole death thing, is there something lost in translation there? Like, was she being serious? Did the kid really believe her? That's crazy. Swim said the mum fishy said, I don't know, there's something off with her. There has to be some reason why her husband left her after 2 months and is very ice cold to her thereafter. I think she is presenting a facade. Yeah, she does seem a little bit, what's the word? Yeah, I don't know what's the word. She's too enthusiastic, though. And wasn't he saying something like how she's just been in love a million times and he's just kind of the latest, but this one she swears is different. But then that all just sounds too likely story kind of thing, doesn't it? The kind of thing that when you hear it, you go, likely story. Good point, says J-Mama. The estranged husband is perpetually tired of her BS. Thermos of beer said, I enjoyed this chapter quite a bit. This book has been rough lately. Death, sad Karenin. So I loved how Tolstoy brought Lydia Ivanovna to life. Her quirks remind me of Emily. I am Norwegian said, a few pages of genuine feeling and now I'm suddenly rooting for Lydia and Karenin to get together. I always used to scoff at weebs and every other television fandom that constantly talked about shipping characters, but now I'm just as bad. There's a joke in there somewhere about waifus and weebs fighting over the supremacy of their Russian lit waifus. The story of Lydia and her husband has me intrigued. We know two things about her husband, one of which is that he's kind, but not to Lydia for some reason. I doubt they're going to be able to keep Anna from her son. And I also doubt that Karenin is going to be happy with Lydia's brilliant your mum's dead plan. Swim said the mum fishy said, Countess Lydia Ivanovna generally wrote 2 or 3 notes a day to Karenin. Lydia is our current times. In our current times would be the type to constantly be texting Karenin. Yep, that's her. Too intense, but I kind of want them to be together just because I want Karenin to not feel so bad about Anna and Vronsky, you know? And replies immediately, says J-Mama 8779. Yeah. She texts too much constantly and replies immediately. I reply immediately, sometimes, not all the time. But I figure, like, if I'm sitting here just watching telly or something and my phone beeps, just answer it. Just reply immediately. But then again, I also do just reply, like, 3 days later sometimes. So maybe I'm just, maybe that just balances out to being normal. Gwynardle said, oh God, yes. Can you imagine her on social media, constantly Instagramming her charitable deeds and waiting for all the likes? Do we hate Lydia? Is that what's going on? Because I can get on board with that. If we want to hate her, I'm ready to hate. I'm a very impressionable young man. I'll just do anything you say. Chapter 24 goes like this. The congratulations at the palace were over. Meeting as they were going out, acquaintances chatted about the latest news, the newly awarded honours, and the changes among the highest officials. How would it do to appoint Countess Mary Borisovna Minister of War, and Princess Vatovskaya, Chief of the Staff, said a grey-haired old man in a gold-embroidered uniform to a tall and beautiful maid of honour in answer to her question about the promotions. And me, aide-de-camp, replied the maid of honour with a smile. Your post is already assigned to you in the ecclesiastical department with Karenin as your assistant. How do you do, Prince, added the old man, shaking hands with someone who had just come up. What were you saying about Karenin? Inquired the prince. He and Puchitov have received the Order of Alexander Nevsky. I thought he had it already. No, just look at him. said the old man, pointing with his gold-trimmed hat to Karenin, who, in court uniform, with a new red ribbon round his shoulder, stood in the doorway with an important member of the State Council. As happy and contented as a brass farthing, he added, pausing to shake hands with the athletic, handsome Chamberlain. No, he has aged, said the Chamberlain, from hard work. He's always writing projects now. He will not release that unfortunate fellow until he has expounded everything, point by point. Aged indeed, il fait des passions. He has love affairs. I think that now the Countess Lydia Ivanovna is jealous of his wife. Oh, come, please don't say anything bad about the Countess. But is it bad that she is in love with Karenin? And is it true that his wife is here? Of course not here, in the palace, but she is in Petersburg. I met her and Alexis Vronsky walking arm in arm on the Moskaya. C'est un homme qui n'a pas. That's a man who has not, began the Chamberlain, but stopped short to make way for and bow to a member of the imperial family who passed by. In this way they chatted unceasingly about Karenin, blaming him and laughing at him, while he, barring the way to the member of the State Council whom he had buttonholed, and not pausing for a moment to fear he might slip away, expounded point by point some financial project of his. Almost at the same time that his wife had left Karenin, the most painful thing that can befall an official, the cessation of his ascent in the service, had befallen him. That cessation was an accomplished fact, clearly visible to everyone. Though Karenin himself had not yet realized that his career was at an end, whether it was his conflict with Stremov or the misfortune with his wife, or simply that he had reached his predestined limit, at any rate it had that year become obvious to everyone that his career was over. He still held an important post, was member of many commissions and committees, but he was finished, and from him nothing further was to be looked for. Whatever he might say, whatever he might propose, he was listened to as if he was proposing had long been known, as if all he was proposing had long been known and was what no one wanted. But Karenin was not sensible of this. On the contrary, being now outside government work, he saw more clearly than ever the defects and mistakes made by others and considered it his duty to point out how those mistakes might be rectified. Soon after the parting with his wife, he began writing a pamphlet on the new legal procedure, the first of an innumerable series of unwanted pamphlets on every administrative department which it was his fate to write. But Karenin, far from noticing the hopelessness of his position in officialdom, and being troubled by it, was more satisfied with his work than ever. He that is married careth for the things that are of the world, how he may please his wife, but he that is unmarried careth for the things that belong to the Lord and how to please the Lord, says the Apostle Paul, and Karenin, who was now guided in all his actions by the Scriptures, often recalled that text. He thought that since he had been without a wife, he had served the Lord by means of these very projects more than before. The evident impatience of the member of the council did not trouble Karenin, who left off expounding his project only when the councillor, profiting by a royal personage's passing, slipped away. Left alone, Karenin bowed his head, collecting his thoughts, and then turned absent-mindedly towards the door where he hoped to meet the Countess Lydia Ivanovna. How strong and healthy they all are physically, he thought, glancing at the powerfully built Chamberlain with his well-brushed and perfumed whiskers, and at the red neck of a prince in a tightly fitting uniform whom he had to pass on his way. It is truly said that everything in the world is sin, he thought, again glancing out of the corner of his eyes at the Chamberlain's calves. Moving his feet deliberately, Karenin, with his usual air of weariness and dignity, bowed to those gentlemen who were talking about him, and his eyes searched through the doorway for the Countess. "Ah, Alexis Alexandrovitch," cried the old man, with a malevolent gleam in his eyes, as Karenin passed him, bowing coldly. "I have not yet congratulated you," he went on, pointing to Karenin's newly awarded ribbon. "Thank you," replied Karenin. "What a beautiful day it is," he added, laying, as was his wont, peculiar stress on the word beautiful. He knew that they were laughing at him, but he no longer looked for anything except hostility from them. He was already accustomed to it. Having caught sight, just as she entered, of the Countess Lydia Ivanovna's yellow shoulders emerging from her corset, and of her beautiful dreamy eyes summoning him, Karenin smiled, revealing his white impeccable teeth, and went up to her. Lydia Ivanovna's dress had cost her a great deal of trouble, as was the case with all her attire of late. Her purpose in dressing was now quite the reverse of what she had had in view 30 years ago. Then she had wished to adorn herself somehow, the more the better. Now, on the contrary, she was obliged to be adorned so unsuitably to her age and figure that she was only concerned that the incongruity between these adornments and her own appearance should not be too dreadful. As far as Karenin was concerned, she attained her object, and to him she seemed attractive. In his eyes, she was the only islet, not of kindly feeling only, but of affection, in the ocean of hostility and ridicule which surrounded him. As he now ran the gauntlet of those mocking eyes, he was drawn toward her enamoured look as naturally as a plant is drawn towards the sun. "I congratulate you," she said, indicating the ribbon by a look. Repressing a smile of pleasure, he shrugged his shoulders and closed his eyes, as if to say that it could not give him pleasure. The Countess Lydia Ivanovna knew very well that it was one of his great pleasures, though he would never confess it. "How is our angel?" she asked, meaning Sirza. "I can't say I am quite satisfied with him," replied Karenin, raising his eyebrows and opening his eyes, "and Sitnikov, too, is dissatisfied with him." Sitnikov was the tutor to whom Sirza's secular education was entrusted. "As I told you, he shows a certain coldness toward the most important questions which should stir the soul of every man and child," he went on, speaking on the only subject which interested him outside the service, the education of his son. When, with Lydia Ivanovna's help, he had returned to life and activity, he had felt in his duty to take his son's education in hand. Never having occupied himself with education matters before, he devoted some time to studying the matter theoretically. After reading several books on anthropology, pedagogics, and didactics, he formed a plan of education, and having engaged the best Petersburg educationalist for supervision, he set to work, and this undertaking occupied him continually. "Yes, but his heart, I see in him his father's heart, and with such a heart a child can't be bad," said Lydia Ivanovna enthusiastically. "Perhaps. Well, as far as I am concerned, I do my duty, which is all I can do." "Will you come and see me?" said the Countess after a pause. "We must talk over something painful to you." "I would have given anything to save you from certain memories, but other people think differently. I had a letter from her. She is here in Petersburg." Karenin started at the reference to his wife, but immediately his face assumed a death-like immobility which showed utter helplessness in the matter. "I expected it," he said. Countess Lydia Ivanovna looked at him ecstatically, and her eyes filled with tears of rapturous admiration at the loftiness of his soul. The old lofty soul, Tolstoy. Alright, that is another chapter done. Have your say about that one over at the subreddit. Thank you for listening, and I will see you tomorrow.